From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. A word that gets thrown around a lot in the food world is authenticity. Sometimes it gets used as criteria, kind of a litmus test to judge if something is the real deal, whether that has to do with food or people.
There's no one Japanese way of eating, and we want to kind of dispel this notion of Japan as one singular thing.
But what if the idea of authenticity is more slippery than we think?
You know, it's the German schnitzel, which became the tonkatsu. It's the curry rice that came from England, you know, via India. But it's a completely Japanese dish.
Ivan Orkin is the chef and restaurateur behind Ivan Ramen in New York. He's practically a unicorn in the highly competitive world of ramen chefs. For one, he's Jewish, and he hails from Long Island. Together with Chris Ying, he's written a book about Japanese home cooking from an outsider's point of view. It's called The Gaijin Cookbook. So, Chris, I understand it was your idea for the cookbook's title. Could you explain the term and why you just wanted to throw it out there?
Well, Ivan and I had talked for a while about doing another cookbook after we did our first one that was more of a memoir of Ivan's life. And we really wanted to do a book that was about actual home cooking, the things that Ivan ate at home, the things that he had taught me to eat and cook, and, you know, which were primarily Japanese dishes or Japanese-based dishes that he had picked up in his decades of living there. And it is a tricky time to try to cook food that, you know, quote unquote, doesn't belong to you. But the more we thought about it, the more we understood that, like, that all food comes from somewhere else, and that the only way to move cuisine forward is to respectfully and curiously embrace other people's traditions. And that is what Ivan has always done, and he's been a student of it for so long. And it dawned on me and him at some point that trying to do anything but lean into and embrace his status as an outsider was silly, and we should just own it and try to make an example of the way that he has approached this. And so that word gaijin means outsider. That's like the sort of official definition, outsider or foreigner or just not Japanese. But it has always carried this connotation of being a derogatory term, sometimes with, you know, said with malice and sometimes just sort of in jest and sometimes just very literally. And so I said, let's not hide this. Let's just make this the Gaijin Cookbook. And I think from the beginning, Ivan was comfortable with it.
Yeah, I am. A Gaijin.
Ivan, how were you originally drawn to Japan, its food and its culture?
Well, I mean, when I was 15, I got a job at the new Japanese restaurant in the town I grew up in Syosset, Long Island. It was my first paying job, and I was always a busy worker, and it was great. But what I didn't know is how much I would fall in love with the smells and the sounds and the activity of a restaurant. So in that respect, it didn't have anything to do with the Japanese part. I discovered that I loved just being in the mix of that. And yet the Japanese part was intriguing to me because I didn't understand the language, but everybody spoke it. And I loved the flavors and the taste of all the food. And the chefs were really nice to me. And it really stuck with me because I knew, you know, I was just a 15-year-old. Why would a 25-year-old guy be nice to a pipsqueak like me? But they were. And so as my life kind of progressed, I held on to this special feeling, and it kind of grew and grew and grew. It sort of got bigger over time. And now it's just like I feel like the whole Ivan Ramen thing and the Gaijin Cookbook thing is my attempt to get the world to notice Japan more. And I want to share my excitement. And I feel like sometimes I feel like, you know, Japan gets short shrift a little bit because it's a little far away. It's a little, you know, mysterious. It's a little expensive to get there. And so, you know, well-traveled people still tell me all the time, you know, my dream is to go to Japan, which I'm always a little mildly offended by.
Which is so interesting because all it takes is to go there once to become kind of obsessed by it.
Chris and I were talking about that earlier. It's you know, people, they put off going for years. And then when they come back, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe I find, oh my God, I can't wait to go back. Why did I wait so long? And I'm like, well, because you didn't listen to me.
When you say in the book to eat more Japanese, what do you mean? What principles are we to follow?
It's this idea of thinking about your surroundings and caring more about people. And, you know, sometimes I don't know if you've ever lived abroad, but, you know, I lived abroad for a long time. And then when I came back to the United States, I experienced kind of reverse culture shock, you know, and I'm like riding on the commuter train and people are putting their dirty shoes up on the seat in front of them. And I'm like, no. Someone might sit there and get their pants dirty. Why are you doing that? You know, and so this feeling of Japan in me that wants to sort of be more aware of others and being a little more kinder. And
yeah, and I think that notion of eating more Japanese, and we acknowledge this in the book, is kind of, we say it somewhat facetiously, there's no one Japanese way of eating. And we want to kind of dispel this notion of Japan as one singular thing, too. And, you know, there are principles that you can really admire about the way that Japanese cuisine is formed. You know, it's attention to detail. It's kind of a variety of dishes and flavors and textures and tastes all at the same time. It's, you know, this really deft hand with umami and not just kind of using umami like a sledgehammer. And these things that are actually not really what you associate with, quote unquote, eating more Japanese. So when we talk about that, we talk about it sort of as a winking nod that people think of Japanese food as one thing. But one of the big things, like Ivan said, is making people love Japan more, but also just see it. See it as a place with people that aren't exactly what you think. It's not with a cuisine that isn't exactly what you think. And as the Japanese experience as being very similar to our own and encompassing all of the same sort of day-to-day rituals and trials and tribulations of putting food on the table.
So, Ivan, you're an inveterate tinkerer. Anyone who's read your ramen book knows that you have a deep love of investigation.
Right.
But when it comes to home cooking, surely you must arrive at the place of comfort quicker, but maybe not, given that this teriyaki sauce is 12.0.
Well, I mean, 12.0, I think Chris came up with that because we were talking about, I would call him and I'd be like, oh, I did another teriyaki sauce today. It was totally what happened. I'd be like, call him on the phone. We talk so much and I'd be cooking and I'd kind of give him play-by-play of stuff I was working on because it was sort of like a very organic creation of all these recipes. And, you know, Chris is a real taskmaster about, you know, he'll call up and say, well, how many, we need this many recipes. How many are you going to work on this week? And so I would get busy and I'd make a list and I would start working on stuff. But while I was making things that I was familiar with, I would also start to play around with other things that could be added in. And I think I was playing around with the teriyaki sauce a lot and having a lot of fun with it. And I kept coming up with different ratios and different ideas and some I would reduce. And, you know, I even have one sauce that's just it's just supermarket sauces all mixed together, and it's my kid's favorite sauce. I do it all the time. it's like ketchup and bulldog sauce and the Korean garlic sauce and just a bunch of different sauces, and I blend them all together, and I marinate stuff and grill with it, and my kid asks for it at least once or twice a week. Now, I didn't put that one in the book, but the teriyaki sauce is that idea, and the oyster sauce is such a killer addition because I mean, you know, the oyster sauce can do no wrong. It's just perfect, you know. And it's funny. And what I love about teriyaki sauce is, as you know, we can sort of laugh about it and even disparage it. You know, for many years, people just thought of, you know, salmon teriyaki. I love Japanese food. And you're like, oh, you know, please. But now it's like, it's kind of endearing to me that people understand, because that is Japanese food, right? I mean, the flavor of teriyaki. Now, of course, we could do it in a more sophisticated way, and there's lots of applications for it. But I think that those flavors of, you know, salty and sour and sweet and caramelized and all those flavors that people associate with Japanese food.
Tell me more about the Japanese equivalent of the American diner.
Yeah, teishokuya.
Teishokuya.
Yeah, teishokuya, my favorite. I mean, I still go to those places, and if you came to visit me, I would take you to some of my favorites because they, like I said, they still do exist. And when we were writing the book, and Chris wasn't with me for that trip because I was doing photographs with our photographer, and we went to a place in the downtown part of Tokyo, and we went up these steps in this little narrow place, and we got some, you know, mackerel that was just perfectly crispy, you know, broiled with salt all over it, and a mound of daikon with some soy sauce poured over the top, and a bowl of rice, and little pickles, and miso soup. And I mean, I make that every 10 days to 14 days at home. I mean, it's one of my all-time favorite things, and that's what I always, I mean, it's almost boring how I only order that.
So aside from that mackerel dish, what is something else that you aspire to jam into somebody's repertoire through this book?
This is sort of, for me, the easiest questions. I mean, you know, ebby fry, you know, you buy shrimps as big as you can find. You don't have to be crazy, but, you know, a nice U16 or whatever, and standard breading procedure, you know, flour and egg and panko, the Japanese version of breadcrumbs. They're a little flakier. And deep fried, served with some bulldog sauce, which is, you know, that sort of Japanese Worcestershire sauce, but sort of richer and thicker, a little sweeter, and tartar sauce, if you like, and a wedge of lemon. Awesome. I mean, I haven't met anybody who doesn't just crush that, you know, from little kids to old people. As we were speaking before, you know, a bowl of curry and rice and fukujinzuke, those bright red, you know, multitude of vegetables that have been pickled, really lovely. Menchikatsu, which are sort of hamburgers that are riddled with cabbage and onions and then breaded and fried. Also served with bulldog sauce and fantastic. And you can put them between two slices of milk bread and it works really well too. I could go on forever, really.
It's interesting. You're not a fan of the word fusion, but I know there's a word for the Japanese concept of Western cooking.
Yoshoku.
It's a whole range of dishes that are like super comfort food.
You know, it's the German schnitzel, which became the tonkatsu. It's the curry rice that came from England, you know, via India. That is now, but it's a completely Japanese dish. I mean, some places lean more towards Indian spice, so they'll give a nod to India, but it's still Japanese. And this whole yoshoku thing, what I was talking about, the ebi fry, you know, I used to, you know, years ago, you didn't go to a fancy French restaurant like L'Effervescence in the middle of Tokyo and where it feels like you could be in New York or Paris. It was more like these Japanese chefs. They would have the white toques on, they had neckerchiefs and starch white aprons, but they would bring you a plate of ebi fry. And it was always, you know, when I first went to those places 30 years ago, I'd be like, whoa, like, wow, like, I just totally don't get this, you know?
So, for example, I see you making spaghetti using ketchup.
Oh, my God. Anything made with ketchup is good.
Expand on that.
Well, it's, you know, I first have to say that my dad, who didn't cook a lot, one of his dishes was ketchup and spaghetti and fried smelts when I was a little kid, and it was one of my favorite things in the whole world.
So that set you up for Japanese home cooking, actually.
It may have. And and Chris and I, when I told Chris about this spaghetti Neapolitan, he was intrigued. And he said, I want you to take me to a place that does that.
Ivan wanted to go to all of the cool places to eat in Tokyo, the Kappa restaurants and the izakayas, and show me like the really inventive, creative side of Tokyo cooking. And I was like, well, tell me again about that spaghetti with bacon and ketchup. And we went into this basement restaurant, and it's just all these kind of like salary. Everyone's wearing a crisp white shirt. And they're all smoking cigarettes outside, and then they get their number called, and they go inside, and they just, like, wolf down this gigantic steaming plate of spaghetti with a salad that has, I think, ranch dressing on it. And the spaghetti is always served uniformly everywhere you go with Tabasco sauce and the green can of grated Parmesan cheese on the side. And it's just, like, a perfect working lunch and absolute sacrilege for, you know, practitioners of Italian cuisine. I'm sure, Evan, you're dying a little bit inside right now.
No, not at all. I am an embracer of all.
Well, you should embrace this one because the ketchup spaghetti is super delicious. And something about cooking it down takes away a little bit of like that kind of cloying sweetness of the ketchup. And it doesn't taste like you took spaghetti and squirted ketchup on top of it.
All I can say is that I'll announce here and now that I think my entire life is driven to figure out how I can just have ketchup on everything. It's my dirty little secret. I love it.
I've been speaking with Ivan Orkin and Chris Yang. Together, they wrote the Gaijin Cookbook. Coming up, we're turning to a cuisine some say is defined by its inauthenticity. My conversation with Chef Joseph Centeno about Tex-Mex when good food returns.